The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Monday, the 7th of January, 2019. Proper back for good now. Everyone's back at work, back at school, and the markets seem properly open. On the podcast today, Matthew Iddiens, Chief Executive Officer of Rose Petroleum, R-O-S-E. And Matthew discusses the Schlumberger study results on their Gunnison Valley unit in the Paradox Basin in Utah. I also have Malky, oil and gas sector specialist, talking about the following companies: Sound Energy, Amerisa Resources, Faro Petroleum, Ophir Resources, Aminex, Victoria Oil and Gas, Pantin Resources, Anglo African Oil and Gas, and Rose Petroleum. Plus, as always, two lists I have for you. The first one is top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see both these lists, top 10 versions of these lists, at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Want to get live push notification alerts whenever a company you follow releases an RNS? Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Matthew Iddiens, Chief Executive Officer of Rose Petroleum. R-O-S-E is the ticker there. Matthew, thanks for joining me.
Great pleasure, Justin. Thank you for having me.
Now, you've had some decent news out in the market. Quite likes it because the share price is up, and it's entitled Schlumberger Study Results. And we'll go into what that means in a bit. Before we do, as always, new year, so maybe new people are listening. Who knows? But if they are, can you summarise what Rose Petroleum is all about, please, Matthew?
Yeah, so Rose is a North American-focused oil and gas explorer, hopefully soon to be producer. So we have a big acreage position, about 80,000 acres in the Paradox Basin in Utah. The Paradox has been successfully exploited directly south of us. Sort of 8 million barrels of oil equivalent have been produced to date. They're literally sort of 12 miles south of us, so just south of us. Mm-hmm. With IP rates, so initial production rates of about 1,600, up to 1,600 barrels a day, which is really good. These wells are horizontal wells. We don't frack. It's an overpressured stacked play. So the overpressured bit is the good bit, which gives you the IP rates. And the stacked play means that you can go in and assess your initial reservoir first, and then using the same well, go back up and test the lower or shallower reservoirs to increase your returns.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. And as far as, you know, what you know about your resource here, what the studies you've done so far, what do you know about it?
Yeah, so we shot 3D seismic at the end of 2017, spent last year sort of working through the technical stuff on that and getting drill ready, so we got all our permits in place. The seismic is key because it's a fracture-driven basin, so you identify where the natural fractures are and then drill horizontally into those rather than drilling horizontally and then going in and fracking. So we use the natural fractures where the hydrocarbons are contained in the fractures, and the fractures are created by basically folds and faults, and that's really what the Schlumberger report is about. Yeah. So last year we got Gaffney Klein and Associates, a competent person's report, to do the hydrocarbons in place, which is so we now have contingent resources, 2C numbers, and this is, bear in mind, this is a small portion of our total acreage and only one of the stacked reservoirs that we have. So it represents about probably 20% of the total acreage, because that's the area where we did the 3D seismic. It was a 40 square mile shoot, and so which roughly covers about 20% of our acreage. Yeah. And that number came in at, the 2C number came in at 9.25 million barrels of oil and 18.5 BCF of gas within that area. So that we know, and there's a producing well sort of 400 yards off the acreage, so we know that there are hydrocarbons, the movable hydrocarbons there. The trick then was, to the next piece of the puzzle, was to understand the fractures. So we got Schlumberger to do the models for the potential fractures on the folds and faults, and that is what this study does. It basically confirms our belief that that there will be fractures there, and that we have not only that, but we've also placed our first well in the optimum location for the data that we have to date. So, and they confirmed that. So it was great. So we've done, and those are the two real parts of understanding how the paradox works. Is there oil there? Which we believe, yes, has been ticked. Are there fractures there? And yes, we believe there are. So those two ticks boxes. The next bit is to go and drill the well, which we plan to do in the first half of this year, hopefully end of Q1.
Yeah, so that's it. There's no more sort of work you can do, really, without actually drilling. Is that right?
That's more or less it. There's a bit of fine-tuning on the trajectory of the well, which we're doing with Schlumberger.
Yeah.
And obviously Schlumberger, oil services company, big one. They provide other services as well, for everything from turnkey projects through to sort of, you know, do they just supply, you know, a drill bit. So you can vary how much involvement they have in your program from one end to the other end of the spectrum. So we'll be working with Schlumberger, refining the trajectory, making sure that it intersects the fractures in the most optimal way to get the best production rates. And that is the final bit of work, really, that we do as sort of desktop ahead of drilling.
Yeah, and if people are listening to this and not aware of Schlumberger, I mean, they are the world's largest oil field services company, so you know the quality, yes, of the information you're getting from them is top notch, kind of thing. Yeah,
exactly, and that's sort of kind of why we chose to tie up with them. They obviously have an office in Denver in the US as well, which is their field office, and then the London office, which is their technical stuff with Aberdeen as well. So we've been working with all the groups, which has been an excellent experience, actually. They've been, as one would imagine.
Yes. So you reckon the drill will be the first half of this year, is that right?
Yep.
Okay, well, do you know what? And people may think, you know, especially in the smaller cap sort of investors and traders may think that's sometimes a long time away, but I can't believe it's the seventh day of January already. It seems like we just started the year, but, you know, that will fly by, won't it?
It will do, yeah. I mean, as we were obviously planning to drill at the end of last year, and we had some work to do with the Bureau of Land Management in terms of permitting and getting everything organised. That is all now in place. So we've completed all the technical work, all of the regulatory work has been done. We are now drill ready, subject to a rig being available and the right rig. Obviously, the overpressured part of it is good for IP rates, but it means we have to make sure that we use the correct rig, so that for safety reasons, and therefore getting the correct rig is the priority for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, three reasons, Matthew, if someone's listening to this, why someone should add you to their watch list, please.
Yeah, so I think technically, over the past few years, we have done a very rigorous job and completely de-risked as best as we can without actually finally drilling the well. The project, we've got Gaffney Cline Associates with the hydrocarbons, as I mentioned earlier, Schlumberger with the modelling the fractures, and so there's not a lot more that we can really do on that front. Regulatory wise, we're all set, we're ready to go. So that leads to the point two, which I think is the fact that we will be a near-term producer. I don't think there are many opportunities like that on AIM, particularly with our third point, which is the significant upside. I mean, it's, you know, we're talking about a big project here. You know, the acreage position is large, and it's a very cheap entry point into it. So I think we have a significant upside on the basis of a successful well you know, the end of Q1 this year. So I think those three reasons, pretty good reasons, really.
Good reasons to hit that follow button. Marvellous stuff, Matthew. Good to chat to you. Like you say, lots of news due, and no doubt we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Justin. Happy New Year.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is oil and gas sector specialist Malky. You're right, fella.
I'm very well indeed. Happy New Year to everybody.
Yes, you too. And I'm just saying, has there been much news on? And you just, before we hit record, went through quite a few of this happening. So, you know, lots of things going on. So what are we starting off with?
Well, yeah, it has been a busy time, even over Christmas and New Year, where in some cases people closed down for a while, but a lot of places in the oil and gas wells was drill bits don't stop spinning and so on. And yeah, there's been some exciting things. And I mean, on the one hand, it's been exciting in the sense of one or two sort of bids and offers in the business, as I talked about before Christmas. When the oil price comes down and the share prices follow them and they fall by too much, what happens is that the companies, particularly those with cash, and they've been waiting to do something like this or have been unsuccessful elsewhere, you know, they can plunge into the market with cash, and it's cheaper to buy oil in international markets, mm-hmm. Wall Street and London, than it is to actually go out and drill it yourself.
Yeah.
So obviously we've had things like Faroe and Ophir, which I'll talk about. But elsewhere, we've also had one or two companies that had been sort of people had sort of pushed into the back and said, "No, these are, you know, for another day or game over." Have actually had incredible resilience, and I'm talking about Sound Energy and Amerisur Resources in here. So mm-hmm. Let's talk about the two initially with these big discoveries.
Yeah.
And, you know, a few weeks ago, you wouldn't have got a penny for James Parsons' thoughts at Sound Energy after the TE9 well didn't come in. Now, we do know that in this part of the world, as, you know, I've visited a number of times and the shareholders have been up there and analysts have been there and so on, is that this Tadji formation, you know, there's a lot of gas there, but it's just incredibly tight and difficult to produce. And so when they had the 5-well, which brought in what is a significant, obviously not in just discovery, but it'll be a gas development and so on. The well which they've announced in the last few days, and the second TE10 update is out this morning, is very substantial indeed. I mean, it's an absolute, you know, it's very, very good news for Sound Energy shareholders, because people were worried that, you know, that the Morocco, in particular, the Tendrara stuff, was going to be, you know, limited to the earlier discovery and the development. But this this is very good news in a number of cases today. The companies say this recent discovery potentially materially de-risks the stratigraphic upside in the northeast of Lakbir prospect, which is what they've been drilling at the moment, which had a pre-drill mid-case potential of 2.7 TCF of gas. Now, if that was the case, then, you know, that is a significant amount of money for Sound. The range is 1.5 to 4.5, so if they're saying that it beats the mid case, then, you know, that's very positive. But one or two other smaller bits and pieces on the side as well, because they've there's a smaller stratigraphic closure in the area, which they've got a mid case of 128 BCF of gas, which would be interesting. And of course, they've got this thin bedded net pay of gas and potential hydrocarbons extending with the head gas shows below the current map structure. So there might be some more down there. And of course, the really exciting stuff is that they've brought gas to surface, which confirms the not just the fact they've got it, but it confirms that the presence of movable hydrocarbons in the reservoir, and that this could be, you know, a very substantial discovery here. So if it is, it opens up Sound in a big way for them to develop. You know, it's a long way to go yet, but it's a very, very exciting early stage discovery, which their shareholders should be very pleased about.
Yeah, because, you know what, in 2016, I mean, James Parsons there was lauded as almost a saint. I mean, the share price went, you know, from, what, 15 pence up to a quid, pretty much, and it topped out there. And then 2017 onwards, it's slowly been slipping down, 2018 slipping down, almost back to like 26 pence, where people have been questioning, you know, the tactics here, but it looks like the halo's gone back on the top of the head for a second there. It looks like it could be a winner here, maybe.
Well, you know, if this is a development, another development in the area, and they've got another well to drill, they're obviously they'll be testing this and everything else, then it really does make Morocco and that part of Morocco most attractive. Mm-hmm. And probably attractive to a bigger company that might say, because there's a lot of acreage around here held by Shell and Repsol, and there'll be other companies who'll be coming in saying, you know, bigger companies will be able to, you know, these tight reservoirs are, you know, they're difficult. But, you know, other bigger companies might decide to have a go at this. So, you know, you don't rule out that Sound might, you know, receive a bid at some stage, partly because they've got such fantastic acreage in the area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, SOU Sound there. What's next, Malky?
Well, I mean, the other big discovery in terms of oil was Amerisur. We talked about this before, Amerisur in Colombia, Justin, and they've been drilling this well on the CPO-5 block, which is to the north of their all their primary acreage, with ONGC, which is the Indian National Oil Company, a well called Indico-1, which has been drilling. Now, this came in last week, and it came in right at the top end of any pre-drill estimates. 4,500 barrels a day of light crude, and it's already gone to long-term test. Don't forget, Amerisur have got 30% of this, so you know they're already getting, you know, 1,500 barrels a day, and of course they've got the Mariposa 1 well, which they drilled on this block before, which is producing. They get 30% of it, so there'll be 1,500 barrels a day from Indica 1. They get 1,000 barrels a day from Mariposa. So probably, you know, it won't be long before half of Amerisur's crude oil is being sold out of CPO-5 block. And it's extremely efficient oil for them, because it's sold at the wellhead, mm-hmm. and it's only sold at a discount of $8 to Brent. so with Brent today at 57.5, they're getting $50 a barrel for this stuff, which is absolutely magnificent. The other thing is that, you know, they've got potential of a significant increase in reserves, because, you know, if you found another discovery, you're into, you know, 1P reserves or resources. Either way, you know, you're suddenly going to increase the value of the business. Mm-hmm. And this will increase significantly the value of Amerisur. It's not just the production and the excitement. They're going to drill four wells off this pad now. They were going to go to Sol 1, which was the next one a wee bit further away, which they will do, and that's nearly drill ready anyway. But actually, from this pad, i.e., you know, the bit of concrete they've set out, they can probably drill four more wells from here. Imagine how efficient they're going to be if they come in anything like this. So I don't think the market has in any way got the valuation of Amerisur right at the moment on the back of these things. While we're away, well, before Christmas, they signed this deal with Oxy. So they'll be drilling quite a lot of the things that they wouldn't have drilled for the next couple of years, but they'll be bringing those forward. Obviously, they'll be drilling certainly the four wells, one after the other, on this pad in at Indico 1. But also they'll probably drill, they might drill the Sol 1 well after that. It's quite possible they could get another rig up there and drill it at the same time. Mm-hmm. So for Amerisur shareholders, there's exciting times ahead.
Yeah, well, you know, we were looking at the chart and we were wondering when it was going to break out and hit that bottom. I mean, it did at that round figure 10 pence pretty much, and now it's gone up to 19.8. I've got to say right now, it's gone up at a breakneck pace from that 10 pence up there last few days, trading days before last year, has, you know, gone up. So at the moment, it's looking overbought. This will be temporary, obviously, but I expect to come back a little bit now and it use a bit of support. But I think the bottom's in here, definitely. You know, we've definitely seen the lowest ever going to be.
I just don't think, I know that it's had a sort of bounce on the back of this, but I don't think the market has quite got taking into account fully the potential on the upside.
And I think you get some stale bulls for selling out to, you know, they've been in it for a while, selling out, so that'll exhaust the upside a little bit for a temporary period. But once those stale bulls are out there.
And obviously I'm looking to talk to John Wardle, who's the CEO here. He is resident in Colombia, so I only get to see him twice a year when he comes over, but he is coming over in February. Yeah. For the results, roadshows, and so on. So, you know, we might have a breather for the end of January, but the bottom line is that come February, he'll be over here, he'll be doing roadshow, he'll be seeing the institutions, he'll be seeing people like me and so on. So, it looks good.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Okay, what's next, Malky?
Well, two or three, a couple of quick things on the takeover front. We did mention that's at the beginning of the discussion. Pharaoh are in possession of a cash bid from DNO. DNO have bought a lot of shares in the market. They did it obviously when the oil price was at its worst, and they topped up last week, so they've gone over the 30%, which takes the offer mandatory. Their first acceptances, they only had 13.1%. So that apart from the ones they own themselves, the market clearly don't think that it's worthwhile. But if you can keep buying the shares, you'll end up owning the company. Mm. There's no doubt that this offer significantly undervalues Faro and is being done at a crafty time because the oil price is low, and therefore the share price got down to below the bid price. So you can't argue that, you know, if a bid's done and the price is out there in the marketplace. But what you need to do is to ensure that, because this is the ultimate opportunistic bid, and the only way that investors in this business can make sure that it doesn't go through is to make sure they keep the price above the 152 share bid. Otherwise, the company will DNA will just keep buying in the shares. You've still got a number of different ways this bid could go, because, you know, probably the favourite is that there'll be a bad day and the share price will come down and DNA will buy more Faro shares and they'll get to the necessary percentage. Mm-hmm. It could also go the other way and the share price could run up a bit. In which case they wouldn't be able to buy any more shares. They wouldn't get acceptances to deal. They'd end up with a big lump of Faro. Mm-hmm. But that's never worried Faro before. They've had big shareholders in there before. It's obviously a tough call, but in my view, shareholders in Faro would be absolutely mad to sell out at this sort of... at this price and this time. It's opportunistic. It's from a company which have got, you know, significantly less history of being able to, you know, Faro is probably the best in the there and thereabouts, the best in the sector in terms of long term discoveries, portfolio, financial engineering, and fully financed with the best management, one of the best managements in the sector. It would be short-termism of the most obvious way if shareholders decided to sell them out at this level.
Yeah. FPM, ticker there. Cool.
What's now, another one which we've talked about before is Ophir Energy, and both the things that I have been forecasting for this company in the last few months have come true in a big way in the last few weeks. First of all, I said that because the market was very worried about their position in Equatorial Guinea, where they've been trying to develop this Fortuna license in the company on Block R. I said on that front that with the expiry of that license due at the end of December last year, 2018, that any buyer, they've been trying to sort of finance it, and but any buyer would wait until the license expires and then go around to the government and say, right, can we cut a deal with you? And the other thing I've been saying is that you know, the new management, because they got rid of the last CEO a few months ago, have been working very hard to try and make this into a Southeast Asia company, which is what they should do, because they should say, right, we're going to lose Fortuna, let's concentrate on what we're good at. They made a good acquisition last year, and they've got some very high-quality things in there. But if not, if they didn't work hard enough or fast enough on that, there'd be a takeover. Mm-hmm. So what's happened? This morning we have heard that that the Equatorial Guinea government has not renewed the license. And last week we heard that this company called Medco Energy is making a cash bid for the company. So Afia shareholders have got a much more difficult choice to make when they find out what it is and whether the management of Afia Energy decide whether they're going to fight it or not. I mean, they, you know, the board might cave in and just say, you know, we've lost Fortuna, you know, the bid isn't here. You know, the bid is here, but and it's a reasonable amount. You know, we should just give in. I think that Afia is worth quite a lot of money, actually. Mm-hmm. I think it's been, you know, overly, you know, people have been overly looking at the Fortuna situation, which has dominated, you know, in the whole year of the last year, has been dominated by Fortuna, by their failure to get it financed, and the magnificent inability to concentrate on the rest of the business. But I think that business in Southeast Asia is very high quality. And if the bid isn't of a generous enough nature, I would strongly hope that the board just restructure. They're going to take a big hit on the back of the of today's announcement. They're taking a $300 million hit in the accounts for Fortuna, which was forecast correctly by some of us. But I think Afia, if they wanted to be an existing business, they don't have to go down the route of selling unless the Bendigo Energy bid is good enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, O-P-H-R. Marvellous.
Okay, I'm going to run through three or four companies very, very quickly because we're running out of time, obviously. But Aminex, good news for shareholders there. They approved the Rovuma farm out to the Zubair Corp last week. This will mean much better economics for the likes of Aminex as they now start to move through. Let the Rovuma be farm out, go ahead. They got a lot of money in due course. The better economics for Aminex will and Solo, to be honest, will become clear. So, you know, that's a good news. It's just taken so much time. Aminex shareholders have understandably been concerned at how long it's taken. When I last spoke to Jay, he told me that it was just because, you know, in that part of the world, in Tanzania, everything is taking longer than they thought. So I'll give them the benefit of the doubt, so good for them. Another one in that neck of the woods is Victoria Oil and Gas, mm-hmm. Which I mentioned a few times. They've had a horrible year last year. They lost the contract for the big power contracting in Cameroon, in Douala. Just before Christmas, that came back again. So they're back in business on that front. And then they announced the completion a couple of days ago of the Mutanda block, which they are farming into. Glencore is the seller there. It's way bigger than Dogbaba, which is what they've got. So, you know, just beginning to see the green shoots for Victoria Oil and Gas. And then two or three people will be looking at Boliven, who've made a big payout this morning, big cash payment there. They reckon that with what it's going to cost to develop Itindi, and of course the next phase of the signing on from their farm out will come in. So they've paid out a decent lump today. They might pay out more, I would have thought. Pantheon, which we've talked about many times last week, announced that they were having a big raise to buy some acreage in Alaska. You can take your money and pay your, you know, you pay your way for that. Mm-hmm. Existing Pantheon shareholders obviously massively diluted by that. But I'm told the management are good. New management are good. So there'll be more excitement at Pantheon. And Anglo-African have had a discovery which they've sort of announced a bit more this morning, which might look quite interesting. I'm going to meet up with them shortly. And finally, Rose Petroleum have also announced that the Schlumberger study, which on their Paradox Basin assets, has been released today, which itself looks quite interesting. And I think that Rose will now look to a small amount of money to be raised in order to drill this GVU-221 well. And I think they'll drill that sometime in the first half of this year.
Yeah, well, I'll be chatting to the guys from Rose on the podcast today, so we'll talk about that in detail. But and also, I know Anglo-African, well followed by private investors, and it does seem like good news, that, doesn't it? So obviously, those kind of things are odds against, so success. So it looks like it's going to, and they're still drilling, so there could be even more upside there,
Yeah, I mean, it looks interesting. I've stood back from this a little bit because I think that you've got to wait and see, and it's not a huge amount of barrels a day, but if it comes good for them, then that'll be very positive.
Marvellous stuff. Marky, thanks for that, and we'll catch up next week, fella.
Yeah, look forward to it.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. Andalas Energy and Power, ADL. Of course, I spoke to Simon Gorringe, CEO, on Friday. At four, Anglo-African Oil and Gas. Good RNS out today. At three, Red Emperor Resources. RNS out today as well. At two, Fresnillo. Number one, most followed companies, Way Education, W-E-Y. I did a video on them on the weekend. I'm posting it out. And I quite like the company. It's online education. I've since discovered there may be a seller in the background, which is quite annoying. There's very little volume going through Way. Volume's picked up last few days, trading days. But I think someone said Mighton may be selling. I haven't seen any notifications via, RNSs. But someone suggested they may be selling. They did sell about 6 months back, but they stopped selling for a while. So who knows? So there may be some downward pressure on the share price. That's why it always helps to scale in, You never know quite what's happening, the entire picture. I like the business fundamentally. But like I said, there may be a seller there that will put downward pressure on the share price. Don't know yet. Haven't had confirmation via RNSs, but I'll wait and see. Okay. Top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Infrastrata, exercise of warrants and total voting rights. At four, Infrastrata, final results and notice of annual general meeting. At three, 88 Energy, operations update. At two, Sound Energy, Eastern Morocco, further TE10 update. And number one, most liked RNS came from Anglo-African Oil and Gas, multiple discoveries confirmed at Tilapia Field. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.